everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Larson of the University of Nebraska. And today I have a really cool guest. Can you introduce yourself to the people of the world?
Yes, I'm Marianne Shockley with the University of Georgia Department of Entomology.
And what do you do for the Department of Entomology in Georgia?
I'm technically an outreach entomologist, so I work with the sector of K through 12 education and doing a lot of science communication with our live insects and arthropods.
So can you tell the folks that are listening a little bit about what outreach is? Because I feel like we talk about outreach and extension and research on campus, and I don't know that people always see the difference. So what is outreach?
So in my mind, outreach really kind of engages the population at large. We do focus a lot on the K through 12 community, but we also focus a lot on the community at large. Extension is often very specialized. You work with specific farmers or commodity groups. Outreach kind of is a little even broader than that, and we really want to educate the public as a whole about, you know, insects, their values, and how we can, you know, work more peacefully with them.
I think that it's a huge piece of the university, too, of the land-grant mission. I mean, it's been there since the beginning, right?
Absolutely.
So we have to appreciate it a little more.
Yes, absolutely.
So how long have you been working in outreach?
Informally for about 15 years in my current position since 2009.
Okay. And did you go to UGA for all your degrees?
I did not. I got my bachelor's degree at Georgia College in Milledgeville, Georgia, and both my master's and PhDs are at the University of Georgia.
Okay. So how did you hear about entomology in these different places that you went to school?
Great question. As an undergrad, liberal arts school, but we did have several entomology courses because there was a faculty member that had a PhD in entomology. Okay. So I took a lot of different types of science courses, but really was naturally drawn to the entomology ones. They were easy for me. I really enjoyed being outside and doing the collections. And so when I had to decide about graduate school, choosing a specialty, the plants didn't really do it for me. You know, the mammals and the zoology didn't really do it. The insects, I could see myself doing that for the rest of my life.
Cool. That's awesome. So what did you work on as a graduate student, if I may ask?
Sure. I worked with Dr. Ray Noblet, and he works with black flies, and okay. We did a lot of biological control projects around the world.
Neat. So where did you get to go?
I specifically didn't get to
travel. Oh, okay.
But I know a lot of the research, we were sent samples from Pennsylvania, from the Susquehanna River, some places in Canada, and then a couple of sites in Africa where there's some really active control programs.
And so this has transitioned into you being the outreach manager for UGA. What do you do sort of on a day-to-day basis?
On a day-to-day basis. So I do a lot of teaching. Okay. I teach about four or five classes a semester. One of the classes that I teach is an outreach class. It's outreach and service learning, and I've got about 100 students in that class, and they are charged with taking our live insects and our penned arthropods into the community. Each student has to do between 5 events or about 50 hours of service, and so basically I train students how to interact with insects. I train students, you know, what teaching and learning looks like, what it means to be a part of a land-grant institution, how to care for live animals, how to handle them and transport them safely. And then they kind of do that on a daily basis. So I'm kind of training the next generation to get excited about insects and to take them into the community.
So this is a departmental requirement or just a course requirement?
This particular class is open to anyone in the university.
Okay.
So I've got a lot of non-science majors, which actually makes it pretty exciting when you can get someone that's an accounting major super excited about bugs and, you know, getting that tarantula out in front of the class of four-year-olds. So it's fun to watch.
What are some of the other classes that you teach?
So this semester I'm teaching forensic entomology.
Cool.
I also teach an online entomology for teachers class.
Uh-huh.
And then I have a study abroad program in the Galapagos in Ecuador, and we teach insect natural history there.
Wow. You're very busy.
I'm busy, yes.
Do you have a lot of tests to grade? Or?
You know, I have a non-testing policy.
Okay.
I'm more of a project and program-driven instructor.
Okay.
I like to facilitate learning. I don't necessarily think that, and this is just personal philosophy, regurgitation of knowledge in our tech-savvy world.
Right.
If I want a question answered, I can Google it. But can I transfer that knowledge? Can I you know, get people excited about a topic and show them how to you know, critically think about that information? That's my mission.
So less sage on the stage, more guide on the side. Is that
okay? Yeah, I like that. I have to borrow that.
I heard that from Purdue once, I think. So that's sort of where you're moving your teaching towards.
Even with something like forensic entomology, you know, being able to identify insects, being able to calculate a PMI, being able to write an expert witness report, those things are very time consuming. Yeah. And just being able to produce that, it takes most of the semester to learn how to do those things and then to be able to actually give me those reports at the end. So that's where my grading comes from, okay. You know, watching this learning over time and then, you know, looking at the project as a whole at the end.
So you mentioned a phrase earlier, service teaching, service learning.
Service learning.
Is that part of this philosophy that you're discussing?
It really is, okay. And it's a type of experiential pedagogy. We've actually adopted it at the University of Georgia. Cool. Many of our courses that are service learning have an S suffix, and so students know if they are enrolled in these classes, they will be doing work in the community.
Okay, so that's what that means.
Yes.
Okay. So it's in the field kind of stuff. Can you Absolutely. Describe it a little more? Because this is something I'm not a pedagogical expert.
Sure. Well, so basically service learning is two-way. It's very different from volunteerism. Volunteer, you go, you do, you feel good, you pat yourself on the back. Service learning, it has to be tied to some sort of instruction. Okay. There needs to be some sort of reflection. So why did we do what we do? How can we do it better? We need to think sustainably. You know, it's great to build an outdoor classroom, but who's going to take care of it over the summer? Right?
Sure.
And kind of that evaluation and that reflection piece. And so I teach a 100% service learning course, which means it's everything that the students do is in the community.
Right.
Versus, say, if I were to teach medical entomology, and then one project they had to do was go volunteer at the local veterinarian's office.
Okay.
So it's kind of there's a different level of service that kids can do. And I put them in feet first.
Yeah. So can you tell me a bit about what are some of the successes that you've seen with this, and then what are some of the challenges with this style of teaching?
Well, the successes are many of the long-term projects that we have going. So many years ago, we wrote a grant. The students wrote a grant and got funded. We built beehives at one of the local high schools. So those students at the local high school still have those bees, and they're producing honey, and they're having little entrepreneur things. They teach an entomology class, and so it kind of comes full circle. We were able to, a couple of years ago, install rooftop beehives at our campus.
Right on.
Overlooking the football stadium. And so that's been kind of something fun for the students to see. Another thing is that students can take the course or some version of it multiple times. Uh-huh. And so seeing students come back wanting to do more community work and really enjoying working with the insects is, in my mind, a level of success.
Cool. And then what are some of the challenges with this kind of teaching and this kind of learning?
I would say the biggest challenge is the coordinating.
Okay.
And how we have administered coordinating these events over years, the years has changed greatly. From 100% phone calls to 100% email to some form of email/Google Doc to now we've got a very sophisticated platform at UGA called GivePulse.
Okay.
And basically community members request a visit. I have a student that goes in and pulls in information and dumps it in this volunteer system, and then my students can go in and register for individual events.
Okay.
And any given week, I may have 20 events that I need to have students in the community for, getting bugs back and forth, you know, transporting the communication that goes on between the students to make sure the bugs get where they need to go and back is pretty intense.
Yeah.
So that I would say the coordination of where everybody is at once is probably the biggest challenge.
Is this ever hard to lead them to where you want them to go?
Sometimes. So I don't have a mile limit per se on how far we'll go from Athens to do these events. I would say the events that are a little bit further away, like in the Atlanta area, are a little bit harder to get volunteers for.
Sure.
So I'd say that's probably the biggest challenge for students. And then just if there's an event that just conflicts with student schedules. But having so many students involved, you know, we have weekday events at schools, we have weeknight events at various locations, and even weekend events. And so above and beyond that, so those events I would consider direct service. They're taking the bugs and doing festival, school, whatever. The indirect service would be I need someone to go shopping for the bugs for me, or I need someone to, you know, go to the grocery store and get all this food because I'm about to cook 20 pounds of insects and I need, you know, butter. But those things can't happen unless I have these indirect projects that students help me with. So
I feel like I've heard you talk about some of this at ESA before. Have you given some some sessions on that?
Yes.
And it's just always really impressed me to hear about this kind of stuff in entomology. And it feels like it really fits in our science really well, this going out into the community, this service-based teaching. Why do you think that is? Why is it that we can utilize that so well as entomologists.
Well, insects and entomology in general is such a tangible subject. It's definitely something, and as a kinesthetic learner, I like to touch and taste and feel and smell, and that's my mode of learning.
Okay.
And you know, with that same vein, being able to show a kid a praying mantis or a walking stick versus just a picture of one,
right,
it just brings it to life.
Right.
And I think that's the main thing. And keeping a colony of praying mantises versus a herd of elephants. I mean, you know, let's be real.
Right.
So it's feasible. It's not very expensive. It's time consuming to rear a lot of insects, but it's not particularly expensive. A lot of the feed that we get for our live animals, we walk around campus and snip roses and privet and
right,
you know, potinia and whatever other live plants we need.
And so, get chased by the homeowner that you're...
Every now and again, yes.
So it is kind of easy. It fits really well with a lot of what we want to do. What advice do you have for people who look at what you do and are hearing about it right now and they see it as a career option that they're kind of interested in? What kind of things would you encourage them to do and to study?
Sure. So the great thing about something like outreach, especially with insects, is that you can do it in an informal setting. So you can work with the university and be an instructor, or you can work in a K-12 environment. But I think there are a lot of opportunities in the informal instruction world. So a lot of the nature centers, or a lot of the museums, or a lot of the bug zoos around the U.S., I'm hearing more. Even the Georgia Aquarium, there's word, talk, that they may be incorporating some invertebrates into those displays. And so it is. So I think there's definitely momentum in this. And even if you're thinking about informal education and the facility that you work with may not have already branched into this world, coming in with those ideas and the knowledge that you can be successful and kids and families and partners will be naturally drawn to it, it's an added value. So, you know, you can even pitch that at a job interview, that this is something that you're interested in and would like to bring
right
to these facilities. And new ideas are always welcome.
Yeah, I think it's one of the better, or one of the cooler, like, non-traditional entomology fields. So it's exciting to meet people like you that are living the dream, kind of, right? How did you get to that point? How did you ensure that you knew what you needed to know and could pull that off?
I would say it started very informally,
okay,
just like a lot of graduate students in entomology programs are involved in outreach activities.
Right.
So I was always interested and I always wanted to do it. I was a camp counselor. I mean, it's always been something I've naturally been drawn to. But when I came back from my dissertation, I was really interested in looking at entomology from an instructional perspective, not necessarily focusing on a single organism.
Right.
And so I actually developed, as a part of my dissertation, the class that I now teach, that entomology, outreach, and service learning. So I think that's how we've been able to grow our program so much, is that it's tied into a class. It's not solely depending on these graduates and undergraduate students to give them their very little time
right
to go out and do all these events. And the public wants it. I mean, we, for better or worse, have to turn away events because even with 100 students on the ground, there's only so much time in a day. There's only so many bugs that I can send out at once. So I think that really helps, too, having it grounded, especially if you're in an academic university setting, having it grounded around a class. You can get a lot more exposure. You can get a lot more buy-in. It's now tied to teaching credits.
Nice.
And, you know, there's funds that possibly can come with that. So it's kind of it becomes a self-generating model almost.
Cool. And do you think that this is something that other departments are going to start picking up on more?
You know, I would really hope so. To my knowledge, there is only one tenure track, quote, outreach entomologist in the U.S. A lot of other insect zoos around the U.S. are either, are mostly administered by a staff member. So I think I'm unique in that I have been able to create one of the only outreach-based university classes. And it just makes sense to me to kind of just pull all those resources together and to get the biggest bang for your buck.
Do you have any people that you admire in entomology outreach?
Sure. I, years ago, kind of stumbled into an education and outreach meeting at an ESA meeting in San Diego and was just welcomed by open arms, like individuals like Martha Lutz and Andrea Schufrand and Rebecca Baldwin. And they've been, you know, very influential with kind of supporting me and guiding me as they get it. They're
yeah
just as passionate as I am, and it's been great to work with some of those folks.
Those are all really cool people. I like talking to them. You mentioned something a little bit ago that I thought was kind of interesting. You mentioned that you needed butter to cook some insects. Can you tell me more about this Paula Deen style of arthropod food delivery?
Well, you got to saute. We can't just serve dry crickets.
That's true.
Worms.
That's true.
So, yeah, when we do a lot of cooking, I mean, basically I pretty much roast everything that I have. Uh-huh. That's my base. And then from those roasted insects, I can then, you know, grind them into flour or add them as a topping or put them on a salad or do any one of thousands of things. So that's, you know, the butter and the salt and the original roasting is the platform for everything that's to come.
Cool. So entomophagy is a centerpiece of some of your outreach?
I would say so. Okay. We have 4 or 5 big events a semester. We're having one next week called Oktoberfest. It's with our local brewery. And
oh, cool.
We always have a, you know, big entomophagy edible insect food table up. So I will be cooking about 10 pounds of insects next Wednesday and getting ready for a big tasting.
How did you get interested in entomophagy?
I would say the same way. Doing those outreaches when we had some of the big community events, it was just kind of common. I thought that's what all the entomology departments are doing. And it was just fun. It wasn't until probably 2008 that I was contacted to attend an international meeting, and they simply wanted to know what's going on in American higher education with entomophagy.
Okay.
And hundreds of phone calls, no one was responding. They somehow got to me, and I said, yes, I'll come and present. I don't know if there's anything going on. And what I found through my research is that there wasn't anything going on. A handful of lecture in a course here, maybe anthropology or food science courses, same thing, a lecture in a course. But above and beyond that, we weren't really talking about it or researching it.
So for some of the listeners that are out there that maybe don't know what entomophagy is, can you give them a bit of a rundown about what that means and why it's so cool and important?
Sure. Well, technically the term entomophagy is insect eating. And so, of course, many animals are entomophagous. In our world, it's human consumption of insects. And historically, insects have very much been so the part of diets around the world. When you look, it's mostly around tropical environments, which makes sense because insects are available year-round. When you get into more the temperate zones, you really don't see a lot of edible insects being consumed. And really, we think, and I've got a lot of anthropologist friends that support this, is that it's not that it's a new food for us, or it's not that, you know, it's not really the yuck factor per se. It is a novel food. We've never been accustomed to it. It's never been a part of our daily traditions. And so it's kind of it's a new thing for a lot of the temperate world to start the idea of consuming insects. But historically, it's very common.
And how do you get them to overcome some of the ick factor when you're exposing them?
You know, a lot of it's education. A lot of it's just kind of showing them the insects, letting them understand the environmental factors, the sustainability factors, the nutritional factors. Mm-hmm. You know, one-on-one, they're just as nutritious as most other animal proteins. And they're actually more nutritious than a lot of the plant proteins because they're a complete protein source.
Sure.
And so you have all these extra vitamins and minerals that you have to add to other feed products and food products. So
yeah. And they buy that? They
a lot of times. So you kind of pose the idea. Uh-huh. And you have some tastings involved with that.
Right.
I have found that people kind of run the gamut to begin with. They don't really want to see the insect. But if you present them with a muffin or a cake or some sort of protein bar, they taste it and say, oh, it just tastes like a brownie or whatnot. And then, you know, there are levels between that. Every now and then you're going to find someone that really wants to have the whole insect.
Right.
But I think right here, right now in America, most of the big products, that you've got pasta, you've got chips, you've got crackers, you've got pasta sauce, they're using the powder form of it and not the whole insects.
So definitely is becoming a big cottage industry here in the U.S.
No doubt about it, here in the U.S. and in Canada and in Mexico.
Okay. And do you think that it will catch on further, or will it be a necessity in the future for people to switch?
I think it'll be a little bit of both.
Okay.
And a lot of people in the industry compare it to sushi. And they say, you know, 20 years ago, you would not find sushi in restaurants. It was, you know, you were others if you consumed this. And now it's just become the norm, and you see it on grocery store shelves.
Yeah.
So I really think as more people are exposed to it, there's been a colleague of mine who appeared on Shark Tank, you know, reality TV.
Nice.
Always gets people excited. And his company, Chipul, is now doing very, very well. Another company, XO, I mean, they you know, made millions of dollars last year with their protein bar. So
cool.
It's slow, but I definitely see it picking up pace.
Well, and that's something that we all, I think we discuss as scientists sometimes, is how do we get people to change behaviors and methods and all that. And we never want to admit that it takes more time than we're willing to admit. But people used to smoke a lot.
That's true.
Nobody used to wear seatbelts. And everybody used to litter. So, like, we've made some progress.
Right. Yeah,
so.
Those behavioral changes are probably the biggest to change. And food choice is really associated with group change. And there's actually huge studies about food choice and group change theory and things like that. A lot of it around the war with food rationing and ideas about, yes, you can eat that liver or whatnot. And there were huge campaigns promoting the other, consumable parts.
Right.
And so I really, you know, it's going to take some sort of huge momentum, huge push, huge campaign, some big grocery store chains or something buying into it before we really see that big shift.
Do kids or adults jump on the train faster?
Oh, kids. No doubt about it. They'll just take a whole shot of crickets, 50 at once.
Right.
And yeah, the parents are, don't eat that!
So it's definitely something we build into the...
You do. You see it with insects as well. I mean, when people are children, they're just naturally drawn to them. About middle school, they start getting little hands-offish. By high school, you've either lost them or you completely engross them. And then when they come into adults, it's polarized almost. So it's kind of just normalizing it across all those age groups. And I think constant exposure and having events where there are food tastings and having events where there are insects and very safe places, I think people will become more aware and notice those beautiful butterflies as they walk through the gardens.
What is your favorite thing that you cook with insects?
My favorite thing, I really, really love crickets.
Yeah.
And I'm a very simple cook.
Okay.
So, just roasted crickets with some Parmesan cheese and garlic I could snack on that for hours.
That sounds pretty tasty.
It is pretty tasty.
Did you bring any of those with you?
I did not. This trip I brought chapulinas, which are a spicy Mexican grasshopper.
Cool.
So we'll get to taste those later.
That sounds awesome. We are going to have a seminar with you today here at Kentucky. We're on the road on Arthropod here today.
Yes, traveling.
And, you're going to be giving the student choice seminar.
That's correct.
Congratulations on being chosen. Is that? That's a really cool honor.
Thank you. It's an honor for me as well.
Yeah, I think that. It'll be a really interesting seminar, and I am excited to try some of your food later.
Sounds good.
Do you have any recipes that we could put in the show notes that we can share with the listeners?
I'm sure I could find some.
Okay.
Yes, no doubt about it.
If people wanted to find you on the web, what are some of the ways that they could contact you?
Easily, it's probably just Google? Marianne Chocolate.
Okay.
I'm pretty far up there.
Do you have a Twitter?
Dr. Bug Appetit.
Dr. Bug Appetit. I like it. Thank you for being on the show today. It was a real honor to get
Thanks,
to talk
Jonathan.
To you. And I wish you luck with all of you.
I appreciate it.